We present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with the cutting scene in The Sun, read by Corey Caulfield.
A toy firm has axed a vibrating replica of Harry Potter's broomstick after mums complained their daughter spent too long riding it.
Thanks to Nick Makey of Tunbridge Wells for that. Let's meet the teams now, please. Welcome first, on my right, Francis Ween and Andy Hamilton. Opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Sue McGregor. Question one goes to Francis. And how appropriate. Francis, who faces a quiet revolution?
I don't know why that's appropriate. Well, I think it's my old protégé, Mr. IDS. So good, they named him thrice, but then reduced him to an abbreviation. No one could be bothered to mention his name at all in headlines if he insisted on having it spelt out. There was extraordinary. The lead story on the front page of The Telegraph on, I think, Thursday began with the sentence, the Tories were plunged into turmoil last night. I thought, call me old-fashioned, but I thought news stories on the front page of the papers were meant to be vaguely newsworthy, and I didn't really think that this was much different from Dog Bites Postman or something like that. But it saved a lot of trouble if they just didn't cover it at all, except on those rare days when they could say, the Tories were not plunged into turmoil last night. The day passed off without incident. Mr. Duncan Smith was still leader. He didn't attack Michael Portillo. Kenneth Clark didn't attack him. Anyway, but that's what they've been doing. They're all bickering away in their happy way. And Duncan Smith thought he would lance the boil by holding a press conference and delivering this amazing statement saying, unite or die. It's always a mistake. Remember, Major did that. He said, back me or sack me. And all sorts of Tory MPs thought, well, actually, now you mention it.
I think he's obviously a student of political history, Duncan Smith, isn't he? And I think he obviously...
He is political history.
I think it's a difficult problem how to deal with internal plotting, and I think he was obviously thinking of that old Lyndon B. Johnson adage, and he said about internal plotters, he said he would rather have them inside the tent pissing out rather than outside the tent pissing in. But it seems to me that Ian Duncan Smith's got the worst of both worlds now. Because they're inside the tent and they're pissing on him. Which I think is... But he made that most serious of errors, which is not giving the press what they want, didn't he? Because he said he was going to make a personal statement, which in tabloid press speak means resignation or Ulrika Jonsson affair, doesn't it? It was a terrible tease. I watched it, and it was all in the past tense. I have led this party to the best of my ability. You could sense the disappointment. It was all foreplay and no orgasm, wasn't it, as far as the journalists were concerned. So he's now annoyed the journalists. But you could have a great time, Francis, with your uncanny similarity to him, because now, with war breaking out in the Tory party, you could go round to Portillo's house in the dead of night and tap on his window and say, I can see what you're doing.
Ian Duncan Smith rejected claims that he was being paranoid just before wrapping himself in tinfoil to prevent David Davis from hearing his thoughts. All this has given rise to a new joke among medically inclined Tory MPs. What's the difference between IDS and IBS? One is an unpleasant pain in the backside, and the other is irritable bowel syndrome. 2 points to Francis. Andy, why didn't the butler do it?
Oh, well, where to start? My goodness, this is such an Alice in Wonderland job, this story. But I think let's start at the really important constitutional issue that this whole business has thrown up, because it was all triggered by the trial of Paul Burrell. And I think that raises the question of just what else has the Queen forgotten? I mean, how bad is her memory? I mean, what's to prevent her next week? She's in a car, on some royal trip with Prince Charles and Prince Philip. What's to stop her saying, do you know, Charles, I've just remembered you're not my son. she might suddenly pipe up and say, actually, now I think of it, Margaret was the elder sister. Which means Viscount Linley should be king by rights. Do you think we should mention it to anybody? I mean, it just doesn't ring true. The dialogue doesn't sound right. I mean, he said to Her Majesty, you only spoke in black and white. the princess spoke in colours. Now, the Queen's next words aren't recorded, but... My guess is it was, who are you, you ridiculous little man?
I mean, am I alone in thinking that the butler looks a little bit like Camp Will Carling? It's exactly the same desperate Dan chin, but a slightly more tremulous lip.
You're not suggesting, surely, Aaron.
Will Carling has a masculine side. No, I don't.
I do have a personal connection with this story, which is bizarre. At the weekend, the general consensus was, wasn't it, that Paul Burrell was a terrible victim of some huge establishment cock-up, and all the papers were very much on his side. But on the Monday morning, when the Sun realised he sold his story to the Mirror, their headline was Blabbermouth, wasn't it? Well, he wasn't as big a blabbermouth as the Sun journalist who sat next to me on the tube that morning, and who had this very detailed conversation down his mobile about how much money they'd been prepared to offer him. And he said that the News of the World had it on Sunday, but Rupert wouldn't let them run it, was what he said.
Well, fancy.
I can't say.
You're very gullible. I could sit next to you with a phone and say, well, hello, can I speak to the nurse in the theatre? I'm running a little bit late, so would you start opening his brain? I'll be there as quickly as I can. You believe it's full of psychotics, the tube, with people with mobile phones. You believe he's a Sun journalist travelling on the tube?
Yeah.
He's been conned, I think.
He is not a real butler anyway, because I went all the way through that transcript. Right. Not once does he say, you rang my lady.
Princess Diana's former butler Paul Burrell, acquitted of sealing 415 of the princess's personal treasures, has sold his story to the Daily Mirror. Mr. Burrell told the Queen of his intention to hold some of Diana's personal papers. He'd have done the same for Princess Margaret, but she'd already rolled them up and smoked them. Sue, who doesn't want to go off to sunny Spain this year?
It's all about the Gibraltarians yet again saying, get lost, Jack Straw. We don't want anything that you might suggest to us. And they think there's a dirty deal being done behind their backs. I think they're probably right. But unfortunately, as it's a kind of Gibraltarian vote, it won't really hold much water because the others are more powerful and can impose their will on them, I guess.
The British government does its utmost to sell them out and betray them and sell them to the Spaniards and do all that stuff. And they all wave Union Jacks and say, we adore you, Britain, we love the British government, we love everything about Britain, we're so British, oh yes, oh great tea and cricket, God bless. Except they all talk with Spanish accents, which like spoils the effect. Mm-hmm. And however beastly Britain is to them, they just love us all the more for it.
But they love Britain because they don't live here, surely. That's the... They have no idea. If we really anglicised it and stopped all their trains from running and shed leaves everywhere, they'd be incensed.
The joint sovereignty proposal has been opposed by most of Gibraltar's 30,000 population. They want to hold on to their traditional British way of life in the Mediterranean without having to move to the Costa del Sol for fish and chips and lager. Alan, listen to this. Music is being played at the speed that Bush thinks. That's one hell of a clue. You clearly don't need a question.
No, I suppose it's about... well, there were two great Republican triumphs. One of them was carried out by Paul Burrell, and the other one is... the other one is Bush's. I mean, the Senate and the House of Representatives, Congress, they've all gone Republican because they're immensely impressed by Bush's firm stance. And Bush now has a mandate. He's not gay, I mean, he's a mandate.
I think what's really interesting is that the Bushes are developing into a bit of a dynasty, which means that soon we'll hear the three most chilling words we'll ever hear. President Jeb Bush. Now, I don't know if any of you have seen Jeb Bush in action. He's sort of like George W. Bush, only without the intellect. So if the world manages through some extraordinary fluke to stumble through two terms of W, we've got Jeb, who, I don't know, it's hard to describe. How many of you remember the Dukes of Hazzard? Do you remember the buffoonish mayor? Well, he's about half as bright as him, I think. He's a grown man who still calls his father Daddy, like JR.
Somebody else who was successful today or overnight was Liddy Dole. That's another dynasty there, the Dole dynasty, you know, Bob's wife. And many years ago, when she had just been given this job and I was doing a programme called Woman's Hour, she came in and I interviewed her. She was a very charming lady, but like a lot of American politicians, the interview was rather long. It wasn't live, it was recorded, so it went on for about 15 minutes. We knew we'd only use about two. And one of her minders came in and put a little baby tape recorder down in the studio. And after she left, I said, wow, some of these people are real windbags, aren't they? And this will come down a treat, and, you know, 13 minutes will come down to 1.5, 2 minutes quite easily, and let's take out all that boring stuff. And just then her minder came back and said, sorry, left the tape recorder on.
By increasing the number of Republican seats in Congress, President Bush has made history by becoming the first president to be democratically elected 2 years after he took office. Bill Clinton was always very keen on the importance of Congress. But fill in your own punchline. We start round two with a cutting from the York Evening Press.
The horoscopes were not published in last night's Evening Press due to unforeseen circumstances.
Thanks to Nev Salt for sending that one in. Francis, who's leaving on a jet plane at last?
Oh, it's not the plane spotters, is it?
Yes, it
you
is.
Mean?
Oh, right. Good, 2 points.
Well, I don't know if that even... Well, all these weirdo train spotters, having been freed, I mean, they were convicted, but they were freed, came back to Britain, then went back into the lion's den, flew back to Greece to appeal, to clear their names. I mean, how they can clear their names by drawing attention to their hobby, I do not know, but they did. And they went back, and amazingly, they've all been acquitted.
But wasn't the key thing that they said they told the Queen they were going to do it, and she said... she said it was all right.
I made a horrifying discovery earlier today, in fact, that there are people, as well as train spotters and people like that one knows about, there are people in this country who are bus spotters. I came across one of them. And they devote their time to spotting buses.
No, they're passengers. when that cry of, oh, look, there's one, goes up, that's exultation.
The Greek judge told the 11 plane spotters that what they were doing was not illegal. Boring as hell, but not illegal. The organiser's wife, Mrs. Coppin, who's not a plane spotter, said in her defence, a plane has a front and a back, that's all I know. To which the Greek authorities replied, that is amazing, she knows all of our military secrets. So 2 points to Francis. Andy, listen to this. Fashion,
very funny that I get the fashion question. Well, this is, I think his name is Hemingway. It's not Ernest Hemingway. Wayne, thank you. Wayne Hemingway, who apparently was a big fashion designer, and now he has come out with this astonishing revelation that fashion is a load of rubbish. That it's all a con. Basically, fashion designers charge hundreds and hundreds of pounds for something that costs 11 quid to make. And you can't even take it back if you don't like it. And I've seen various bits of designers saying that this is a gross slur on fashion and that actually stitching three bin liners together in an ironic statement and then getting some anorexic to walk down in front of loads of rich people is a high cultural achievement. I come across as a bit partial on that? Do you want me to do another answer that also gives the other side of the story?
No, don't bother.
No. Well, he ran this label called Red or Dead, I think, which, when I was reading this week, it struck me as one of those Duncan Smithy-type formulations. I thought when IDS gets sacked, he can launch his own hip, expensive upmarket fashion label called Unite or Die.
But he's now one of the BBC's kind of fashion advisors. If you go onto BBC I, because now that I'm not doing this day programme, see, I sit at home and... you know, press all these buttons on my computer. And I came across him the other day, and he answers questions. You know, Don from Sheffield says, Wayne, tell me, is it bell-bottoms or, you know, shaggy jeans this year? And he's that's what he does now.
Was that one of his recommendations, that thing you're wearing?
That's not the most gallant thing I've ever heard you say.
I was actually admiring it enormously, and I wondered if you consulted him before you came out to it.
I bought this in Italy.
It looks like a designer thing to me.
It's, well, no.
Stop digging.
Is Wayne Hemingway his real name, or did he choose that?
I was wondering
as a name?
That,
because
Andy.
Wayne and Hemingway
don't really
go together, do they? That's like sort of Clint Shakespeare.
Mr. Hemingway claimed that buyers, designers and fashion journalists are all part of a conspiracy, leading to suspicions he might have picked up Ian Duncan Smith's speech by mistake. Sue, your question. Who starred in charge of the light-fingered brigade?
Ah, this was a bit of fashion nicking, was it? Are we talking about a famous lady in Beverly Hills? It's Winona Ryder, and she went in, and her excuse was that she was actually rehearsing for a role as a shoplifter, and she wanted to do the authentic thing, you know, so she went in with her scissors and snipped off the labels and stuffed them in a plastic bag.
She said she was told to do it by her director, didn't she, for a movie? And the flaw in that defence was that she couldn't name the movie or the director.
And the mistake she made was not actually doing something. I mean, what she did was put stuff in it. If she'd gone up and done the cab scene from On the Waterfront, when she got up to the CCTV camera and said, "You should have looked after me, I was your brother," we would have accepted this. But she looked like a shoplifter. But just snipping labels off things and putting them in the bag, you think, what kind of film would that be? I wouldn't want to go and see a film.
In her defence, Ms. Ryder said that she had mistaken the department store for her walk-in wardrobe. During the court case, her defence lawyer recalled a scene in one of her recent films where she played a character who got her kicks by shoplifting. Close friends feared for her safety as she announced her new role as Hannibal Lecter's girlfriend. Alan, which Norfolk criminal is laughing all the way to the bank?
I think this is a bloke called Carroll, who was a villain with a tag on his leg. Didn't stop him hopping down to his local newsagent and buying a ticket here. He bought one and won £9 million. It's a mark of respect. The police have now taken the tag off, which I thought was jolly sad. I felt very sorry for the tag. This tag was going to go into Ferrari showrooms and high-class knocking shops, and it was going to get a life instead of being on this tow rag's leg forever.
He was done for throwing buses at stones, wasn't he? Well, 9 million. No, stones at buses.
Was that...
What a surreal image that was. He was done for throwing stones at buses. Well, you think how many buses and how many stones you can buy with 9 million. He's going to have a wonderful time. But he said he's going to go straight, and I think it's interesting. It sort of links up with the Winona Ryder case, which is that part of her defence was that rich people don't steal. You thought, has she not heard of Enron?
He did say it wasn't his fault, it was the drink, didn't he? Because he drank about 4 pints of scrumpy every day. He said, it wasn't me, it was the drink that did it.
He must have a bladder of iron, the man.
19-year-old criminal Michael Carroll of King's Lynn won nearly £10 million on the lottery this week. On Saturday, he was still living off a job seeker's allowance, but wouldn't say which job seeker that was. He served more than 2 months in a young offender's institution, or BBC One's Fame Academy, as we call it. Before we start the final round, here's a South West Trains passenger announcement.
We apologise for the lack of seats. This is due to the volume of passengers.
Thanks to A.G. Merriman for that. Francis, who aren't as posh as they thought?
Peterborough, I think. FC. Peterborough, for about 80 years, I think, has been called the posh. And they tried to register this as their official nickname. And someone called Victoria Beckham has got her lawyers onto them, saying, I am synonymous with the word posh, and it is my trademark, and no one else is allowed to have it, because I'm known throughout the world as posh. And I am posh. I think perhaps she's not as bright as some people suggest she is, because actually the reason people kept calling her posh was as a joke. Because she's not posh. She hasn't twigged this poor girl. She thinks she is. God bless her. But she's determined to protect this name, which she pretends not to like anyway. And Beck's is writing to the German beer company. Commanding a royalty on every bottle sold. That's what I think.
What's Jerry Halliwell doing? Is she writing to Berlin?
But this is a scandal because it has very... It's about things called image rights. And it has very serious implications for football clubs if they're not allowed to use their nicknames because they infringe copyright. For instance, you Crystal Palace are the Eagles, which is a pop group. They could say they're infringing.
The Toffees.
Yep.
Werther's Originals could be onto them.
Yep. And Northampton Town are the Cobblers, and that's John Prescott's trademark. So... But I worked it out. I could sue Hamilton Academicals. Hamilton A appears on that score sheet every week.
Well, I could demand a large fee on the 31st of October every year when people come up and say, "Hello, Win."
There'll be another chance to hear the news headlines tomorrow. Mrs. Beckham is thought to have launched her action after seeing United's club fanzine. The headline was, "Posh going down again." If the move is successful, David Beckham plans to launch a claim for trademark infringement against McDonald's for calling its milkshakes thick. Andy, what's gone nuts in Nutsford?
Oh, now, hang on. Does this involve a squirrel?
Yes, of course it does.
Oh, well, you see, I don't know this story, but I can see from the feral glint in Alan's eye because he was explaining to me the techniques... for dealing with squirrels earlier in the evening. So I'm going to hand over to Alan. Alan, this squirrel correspondent. Now. I don't know. I know that involved someone being bitten. I don't read Squirrel Monthly every week like that.
A child was bitten by a squirrel. And it was like a very, very, very low-budget American movie. You can see it done in black and white. The town got together and got his air guns out. I mean, it's really, really low budget. You know, it really isn't High Noon. They got air guns and catapults. And they cornered this squirrel, and they filled it full of lead. There's a picture of the child with a few squirrel punctures on her with bits of plaster on. The medicine there is not quite as good as the marksmanship. Anyway, the child's got elastoplast on, and the squirrel has been blown all over Knutsford.
Is that most frightening of animals, a rogue squirrel who's tasted human blood?
Is it a cousin of that, the trout that mugged the girl? Was that in the... Did you see that?
No, that was a trout.
That was a girl who was mugged by a trout. She went to an aquarium.
And I was called gullible earlier.
She was on a school outing, and she was standing there. She was holding a £5 note in her hand for some reason, and the trout leapt out of the tank and grabbed it and went back down under the water and ate it.
You're not confusing it with the flying flounder, because that was this week.
Herbert the Turbot.
Yeah. I thought it was a flounder.
Yeah. And this
Herbert, children. No, it was Herbert the Turbot who got caught.
And put in the fridge.
Put in the fridge. Opened the fridge door 18 hours later, saw a gill flapping, put it in a bucket of fresh water, which he shouldn't have done either, and took it to the aquarium, and Herbert's fine now.
I would have rung Selfridges and said, "They're about this bloody fridge I bought." Open it in the morning and a warm fish comes out.
I hope nobody's recording all this.
The inhabitants of Knutsford were terrorised by a rogue grey squirrel. I was shocked and amazed when this powerful grey beast just leapt upon me, said Edwina Curry. Alan, why was there smoke without fire?
This village built a bonfire. It was cardboard and tinfoil for bonfire night because the health and safety executive didn't like real fire and the insurance company wouldn't insure them against it. Although I gather there's a huge claim because one of the children walked into the box. It's about bonfire night.
Yes.
I thought you were saying...
Sorry, I was miles away. So were you...
Oh, that is so generous of you, Simon. I wish I were, but I'm guilty.
So was it an imitation bonfire?
You got the nail on the head there, Andy. Yes, it was an imitation
bonfire. It was a virtual bonfire. Have virtual fireworks?
Villagers in Sherston, Wiltshire, were forced to erect a fire that wasn't at all bon, after a massive hike in insurance costs meant they had to create a fake fire for Guy Fawkes Night. The news meant one less opportunity for villagers to roast their chestnuts on the common. So no wonder Ron Davis didn't bother turning up. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
This is from my local paper, the Essex County Standard. Last Friday, a near-naked man arrived at the Asda store in Turner Road, Colchester, to do his shopping. Detective Sergeant Roger Napier of Colchester Police said the man turned up wearing just a sock, and it was not on his foot.
Andy.
I'm very grateful to Anton Humber of Sydenham, who sent this. An armed hijacker who held a gun to a bus driver's head was caught when the double-decker pulled into a police station. Jobless Martin Cass, aged 53, allegedly boarded the 320 bus in Biggin Hill Valley, ordered passengers off and told the driver, "Take me to Bromley." John Hill, operations manager at Orpington Bay's Metro Bus, which runs the service, described the incident as unique and praised the exemplary actions of the driver. Mr. Hill added, "He handled the situation extremely well. He was not physically hurt, but was very upset by it. The bizarre thing is, this bus goes to Bromley anyway."
Sue.
This was sent to us by Peter Hatch, and it's a letter that was in the Daily Telegraph recently from Mr. Don Mudd of Nantwich in Cheshire. And the letter says, "At Auckland Airport 3 weeks ago, an Air New Zealand flight was cancelled and a single attendant had to deal with rebooking a long line of inconvenienced passengers. One angry man pushed his way to the desk, slapped his ticket on the counter and said, 'I have to catch the next flight and it has to be first class.' The attendant replied, 'I'm sorry, sir, I have to help all these people in front of you first.' The irate passenger was unimpressed and asked loudly, 'Do you know who I am?' Without hesitating, the attendant grabbed her public address microphone. 'May I have your attention, please?' she asked. 'We have a passenger here who does not know who he is.'"
Alan.
It's in the Sheffield Star. Woman using the council's sauna at Mansfield faced a 10p surcharge to get out after the council put up the rates while she was inside.
Now let's look at the final scores. Francis and Andy have 14 points. Sue and Alan, this week's winners, with 15 points. Before we leave you, here's an item from Yarrell's Prep School newsletter.
Yarrell's Prep School Lunchtime Chess Club. Shin pads are advisable, but not essential.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Wheen, Andy Hamilton, Sue McGregor and Alan Corrin. The chairman was Simon Hoggart, and the news was read by me, Corrie Caulfield. The chairman's script was written by Simon Littlefield, Paul McKenzie and George Coles. And the producer was Simon Nichols.